Jurgen Klopp's big farewell at Liverpool looked as though it might be glorious just a few weeks ago, but the sheen has faded badly. The FA Cup and Europa League have fallen by the wayside, and Wednesday's dismal derby defeat at Everton may well have blown an irreparable hole in their title bid. A win at West Ham this weekend is non-negotiable. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. Something else that's non-negotiable is having quality tipsters on this show. Once again, we've obliged, putting together a top team, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, Liverpool, it has to be said, pretty feeble in their defeat at Everton in midweek. They do look to be a side that somewhat lost its way.
Yeah, I think on the show, the midweek show that we did, we weren't exactly overly positive with Liverpool's prospects of going to Goodison Park and getting a victory at the prices that they were outlined as. I think Lewis was obviously quite keen to back the draw, and I sort of alluded to the fact that I thought Everton plus 1.25 was a better bet than backing Liverpool to win that game. But I didn't expect Liverpool to be quite so feeble, as you put it, really, especially after the performance against Fulham at the weekend, where they did look, I wouldn't say back to their old selves, but a lot more sort of compromising compared to the team that showed up at Goodison Park, where, you know, it's been done to death, really. But the almost the non-negotiables, you know, where Liverpool fell down in, really, the duels, the battles. And that was quite disappointing, really. I mean, for a good hour or so, Liverpool dominated possession and territory in that game as well, but were unable to really open Everton up convincingly and consistently either. So, you know, it wasn't just one aspect that let themselves down. And I thought it was quite telling to hear Jurgen Klopp have to sort of apologise to the supporters, and then Virgil van Dijk being actually quite spiky in his criticism of his teammates and their performance levels too. So, understandably, Liverpool will be feeling down in the dumps right now, but I don't believe their title prospects are in smithereens just yet. I still believe there are a couple of twists and turns in this title race still to come. You just have to look to this weekend with Spurs hosting Arsenal, a very similar sort of style game to what Liverpool had to endure in midweek. There's an opportunity there for Arsenal to drop points, and I'm not completely convinced that Man City went out from here either. So from a Liverpool perspective, you have to refocus. And, you know, I did my prep before that game against Everton at Goodison on Wednesday night with regards to Liverpool's game at West Ham this weekend. And, you know, their task is still exactly the same. You already said, you know, it's still must win from here until the end of the season. Every single game is must win. The matches are coming thick and fast for Liverpool, and I think that possibly might be a bit of a positive. They don't have time to sort of dwell on that derby defeat. They get an opportunity to put things right this weekend. The schedule has been quite tough with Europa League quarterfinals chucked in, you know, either side of the Palace and Fulham matches. Then you play the derby Wednesday, early start on Saturday, a quick turnaround. But I think Liverpool are kind of accustomed to a relentless schedule. And I think, as I say, I think there's an opportunity here to sort of bounce back, if you like. And that's probably the big negative I have, is obviously Wednesday's performance, but also that schedule. West Ham have the rest advantage, having had no midweek action. But I thought they looked pretty goosed, actually, last weekend when they went to Palace. Understandable, really. David Moyes isn't a big rotator of his team. And, you know, they came off
dreadful
that
in that first half, weren't they? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Calamitous, really. It's almost like they waved the white flag after the opening goal. They looked lethargic. They looked laboured, which is understandable after playing Leverkusen in a key Europa League tie just days earlier. But, yeah, Palace took them to the cleaners, really. And I just have a feeling now that West Ham's season is almost done. European qualification does look out of reach with with England not getting that extra place for qualification. And just considering the lay of the land right now, you've these behind-the-scenes murmurings about Ruben Amorim in conversations with the club about the managerial gig for next season. I'm hesitant to say they're on the beach, but I think West Ham wouldn't be too bothered by the last few weeks of the season, which is obviously good news for Liverpool. And I think Liverpool will be bouncing back here and putting on a show, because their approach is very different to sort of the all out of control of City and Arsenal. And I think that does kind of lend itself a little bit more to games against the likes of West Ham. And the way I'm going to play this, actually, is Liverpool to win. You know, the market's already kind of quite high on them doing so, about 155 on the exchange to win this game. But I'm going to include both teams to score to boost that price right up to about 6-4 on the sportsbook. You will get a bigger price on the exchange closer to kickoff. But Liverpool have actually kept one Premier League clean sheet since mid-January and kept only 4 clean sheets on their travels all season in the Premier League, which is quite concerning, really, if you are a Liverpool backer. But I just think that firepower, it hasn't worked out in their favour in the last few weeks, obviously. But I just think against the West Ham side, who are just fading for me at this point of the season, there's an opportunity here. And I just think the way the market is stacking up, Liverpool to win around 155. Liverpool to win and BTTS is closer to 6-4. If not, it's going to be bigger than that. Exclude the bottom four and 11 of Liverpool's 13 away days in the Premier League have seen both sides scoring. Both teams to score here is hovering around the 155 mark as well. So the market is already heavily tiered towards a Liverpool win and both teams to score as standalone singles. Overs is sub 1.5 here as well. The spreads have Liverpool in for about 2.5 goals in this match. So the market is telling, almost yelling at us for Liverpool win, both sides score, Liverpool score at least twice here, and both teams to score comes in. So just have the combination at 6-4, and I'm going to say it's going to be bigger than that because it will be on the exchange. The implied price is there hovering around sort of 37, 38%, and just doesn't feel quite right to me. Eight of West Ham's 10 matches against the top six have seen both teams to score. And they still do have quality in forward areas, whether it's through physicality, pace, or the ingenuity of that midfield. Ultimately, I don't really rate this West Ham team, and we've sort of had a kind of asterisk beside their name all season based on the underlying performance metrics, and perhaps it's coming to roost right now.
Trader, tipster, and one of the world's leading experts on igloo architecture, Emmett O'Keefe, is with us, having torn himself away from his Inuit studies. Emmett, Liverpool have to win all four remaining games and then pray, really. They kind of need snookers, don't they, at this stage?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think there's definitely hope for them in terms of Arsenal dropping points, given their fixture list. It's the Man City part. It is the kind of difficult one that they're definitely going to need help from. I think probably that Tottenham away game that Man City have, and maybe the Brighton away game that's happening after the time we're recording. But it is, I think, the City slip up is the kind of tougher part to imagine. Like Mark said, though, I think they might find amenable opposition here, kind of amenable, demotivated opposition that are kind of know the manager is leaving, and in some cases, some players' cases, Lucas Paqueta, for example, I think probably had their eye on the exit door. Jarrod Bowen had to get injections to play against Bayer Leverkusen. I think he probably won't play here, and he's a massive loss given how outstanding he's been this season. I think he's done some superb. He's really developed as a kind of a playing as a kind of a central striker for a lot of the season, and some of his and in West Ham, as a lot of the listeners will know, West Ham play a very kind of counter-attacking, anti-modern type of style. In that style of play, you need the kind of hold up players who can get you up the pitch and bone so that really superbly. So I think he's definitely a huge miss, and you kind of don't want to put too much minutes on Mikel Antonio given his age and just and kind of is it
doesn't stop David Moyes though, does it?
No, it doesn't. I don't think exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's they
play him every week.
Yeah, he definitely loves them. I wouldn't have a massively strong opinion on this game, but I just think the one angle I'd like if you're doing a bet builder would be the Liverpool team shots. They're not quite Man United, but West Ham aren't far off in terms of shots conceding. They're fourth from bottom in the Premier League, and kind of Liverpool playing with urgency in a kind of a must-win game. I can see this being kind of a bit of a shot avalanche. The line is set at kind of evens Liverpool to have over 20.5 shots. But even though that sounds high, I think the way West Ham play, I think the way they played last week against Palace is a kind of a sign of what we'll get here—a really one-sided game where Liverpool dominate the shot count and win relatively comfortably, I think.
Darwin Nunez might have 10 of those, the way things are going. Very tough midweek for him, but I still believe in Darwin Nunez. Finally, odds compiler, tipster, and Malta's official king of fun, Mark Stinchcombe, is with us. Stinch, Liverpool's finishing too wild, too wayward in recent games, and it has cost them dearly. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because you look at the attacking XG, you look at how many chances they create, that part of it, it is not the issue. It's just been finishing, hasn't it?
Yeah, finishing and then conceding at key moments. I would say against Fulham, conceded just before half time after finally scoring the first goal in the match. And all too often, I'm not sure what the stat is, but I think they've conceded a lot of goals in the first 15 minutes of games as well. And overall this season, they've conceded first in 47% of Premier League games. Well, that if you concede in first
Yeah.
and you've got a win from behind in nearly 50% of your matches, it's always going to be very, very, very tough.
That's always the
Despite.
interesting thing, isn't it? Sorry, Stitch, I was just going to say, because there's been a lot made recently. City have got this as well, where people go, oh, look how many points they've got from losing positions. Isn't it great? They've got real team spirit. Well, you shouldn't need to do that. I mean, it tells you a lot that City have wobbled a little bit this season, that they've needed to come from behind so often.
Yeah, I would say there's a few things here. Firstly, the extra injury time helps, so there's more time to get these goals. So maybe it's not as bad as maybe it seems. Maybe in City's case, I would say in Liverpool's case, it's not very good at all. However, obviously they have won the most points from losing positions this season. So then, but then I would say it's not sustainable. However, Liverpool going once going goal behind, I think the opposition naturally sits back. And as you say, it's not as if they haven't created good chances. So it kind of has been sustainable, but then at some point, I guess you do maybe get that period where strikers just miss chances because they're human. And I think then maybe you just say that Liverpool don't have a world-class finisher, even if they have got very, very good attackers. Maybe that's fair. Maybe they don't have the clutch of Mane, and Salah is maybe coming back from an injury slash maybe not at a peak, and rightly so, perhaps at 31, he's never going to hit that peak again. So I think
We had
that's.
Jota back in the Liverpool squad for about a week, and then he was injured again. And we made a big deal, rightly, about Jota's finishing because it's excellent. But then he disappeared again, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that is perhaps an issue, the availability of Liverpool forwards. You almost had Mane, Firmino, and Salah always available for season after season, and I think Jota has been picking up, not necessarily his fault, but he has been picking up injuries, and it has been a miss. And I would say Liverpool maybe missed a trick, perhaps not having sort of, if you're going to play three forwards, having cover in every position. They got five forwards, one drops out, as it has been, a couple have been unavailable. Then you're scratching around for who you can play there. Harvey Elliott's played in the forward line this season, and he's more of a provider than a scorer. I think you had Curtis Jones sometimes appear up there. Previous seasons, you had Oxlade-Chamberlain appear up there as well. So it's not really been great. I would say Gakpo doesn't seem to have fitted into any of the positions necessarily. It's not to say that he won't, but again, it's another one. I just think the drop off from peak Mane, Salah, Firmino to the other strikers is too big for a team trying to win the league. And you look at them right now, I mean, the guys seem quite confident that Liverpool can win this game as a Liverpool fan, and having watched the last few matches, my confidence is definitely not the same as the market. Liverpool wanted to win here. I just don't know who's going to score, to be honest. Salah, no goals from open play in his last seven. No assists either. Diaz, one goal in his last seven. Nunez, one goal in his last nine. And from memory, I think that went in off his backside. He's -7.8 versus expected goals this season, which is by far the worst in the league. Is he a natural finisher? I think that is a question. That's something that might be able to be developed, but at the money and at the club he's at, and at the position that the team are trying to challenge for, that's not something you can have time to rectify. I think
It's difficult
the.
with him because there's so much to love about his game, like the creative side of it. He does create lots of goals for other people, but ultimately he is there to score goals, and he is in double figures in the Premier League. But you look at the number of chances he does get and does either hit straight at the goalkeeper or slice wide or what have you. It's not great, is it really?
Yeah, he's not ruthless enough, and we're now well into his second season, so it's something you would expect to have happened if it's going to happen at that price point, essentially. So yeah, what am I backing here? I mean, sticking with the seasonal trend basically of Liverpool conceding first. It's, as I mentioned before, conceded first in 47% of Premier League games this season, 16 of 34. That rises to 53%. Away from home, it's a 1:30 Saturday kickoff, which we know Jurgen Klopp is definitely not a fan of. And if you've had to put a lot of energy, both physically and mentally, into a derby on a Wednesday night, West Ham have had a week off. I think we could see another slow start from Liverpool, perhaps. West Ham joint worst away team opening the scoring, but at home they're the fourth best in the league. They've opened the scoring in 10 of 17 home games. And that's included against City, Villa, Chelsea. And then if you look in Europe, probably the best team outside of England right now. They also scored first against Leverkusen. I know Leverkusen didn't need to score first, but it just shows that they do have the propensity to take the lead. So West Ham score first is 9-5. So, a much lower percentage than the 53% Liverpool are conceding. So I could see another slow start from this Liverpool side that do look really off the, they don't look at the races at all.
Injury time goals, as we know, can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets. Now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's are in the description. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. Chelsea utterly atrocious in midweek as they were blown away 5-0 at Arsenal. This weekend, they go to Aston Villa. Emmett? Cole Palmer FC need a response and they need it quickly. That was a bizarre thing, I thought, for Mauricio Pochettino to say, to challenge his players to prove they're not Cole Palmer FC. And then without him, they just completely collapse.
Yeah, it's they're definitely it's kind of a tough thing for Pochettino, because I do think, like, when you looked at that back line against Arsenal with Alfie Gilchrist and kind of Badiashile and Disasi together, you did think it was kind of asking for trouble. I think that more than the Palmer injury, I think was the kind of big thing. So, and even taking out the Arsenal game, that wasn't just a one-off. When they played decent opposition, bar the Man City away match, they tended to collapse. They collapsed at St James's, lost 4-1 against a really injury-hit Newcastle. They
That
were
was a
terrible.
dreadful performance as well. Thiago Silva was really awful in that game, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And they were terrible against Liverpool away from home as well. When they lost 4-1, and that game could easily have been a lot worse. So it kind of continued the trend of the season in terms of Chelsea. And I do think, coming on to Arsenal, I think there's possibly the market is giving, I think, Arsenal too much credit, because I think that game said more about Chelsea than it did Arsenal. But I think, and given Chelsea's kind of Jekyll and Hyde nature, it wouldn't shock me if they kind of came out with a much improved performance here, and kind of Nicholas Jackson caused Aston Villa a lot of problems with their high line. But I think one thing we can rely on is Villa to get plenty of chances here, because I think we've seen Chelsea concede 16 goals in their last six games, including two to Sheffield United, two at home to a 10-man Burnley, three to kind of struggling Man United. So I think we can trust Villa to get plenty of chances. And so I think what bet I like most here is Ollie Watkins related. A lot of the listeners will be aware Watkins leads the league in goal involvements. He's 31 goal involvements in 33 Premier League matches, which is incredibly impressive. And basically, since Unai Emery basically joined Aston Villa, Watkins' numbers are that of a world-class striker. So I think it brings home, what a great coach can bring. He can elevate a player from a kind of a very good to a world-class level. And Ollie Watkins, if you put him on a transfer market pre-Unai Emery, he might have been worth maybe 35, 40 million. Now, if Villa put him up for auction, he'd probably be 70 or 80. So I think there's a lot of players in that Villa squad, like likes of Douglas Luiz, John McGinn, whose transfer value and performance level has massively improved since Emery joined the club. But against kind of such amenable opposition as I expect Chelsea to be, Watkins score assist here at 1.9 looks like a very solid bet, and a kind of a really good selection if anyone's doing a bet builder as well.
Yeah, Mark, it's an interesting one, this, because Chelsea, I've commentated on a fair bit recently, and there were little sparks, and you thought, okay, maybe they're going somewhere. But there are so many children effectively in that team, and they kind of do play like it because they don't have experience and they don't really have the maturity to deal with adversity. So once some things start going wrong, the whole thing collapses.
Yeah, I agree. I was pretty positive about Chelsea's prospects going to the Emirates on Tuesday night. Well, I was really until Cole Palmer's illness became public knowledge and Malo Gusto was ruled out as well, two really, really big players for them. But I still felt they could cause Arsenal problems in transitions. And, I know what Emmett's saying, and he's picked out some very obvious games when Chelsea have completely collapsed. But I think some of their better performances have come when they're allowed to break and then play on the counter attack a little bit against elite opposition. I think of the reverse match with Arsenal at Stamford Bridge, the two games against Man City in the Premier League, the FA Cup semi-final last weekend. All examples when Chelsea have stepped up a level and competed and looked actually quite good.
And the one at
In
Villa in the
fairness,
cup as well and played really well.
they played really well that day. Yes, they did. But yeah, in fairness, Arsenal did boss the first half, but I still felt Chelsea were a threat and weren't really out of that game despite conceding the early goal. It's just the way in which they disintegrated in the second half was alarming. And Pochettino describes his team as soft and calls out his players for kind of giving up in the second half, which is a big concern, really. And for any sort of stems of positivity that we were perhaps having about Chelsea in the last couple of weeks, that sort of disintegration does eat away at your confidence in sort of being with Chelsea going forward. And I'm working on the assumption that Palmer is back this weekend, but Gusto is still likely to be out. So, the market absolutely hated Chelsea when the team news came out in the sort of 24 hours prior to the Arsenal game. They drifted like a barge, really. So eager to see where they line up at kick-off against Villa, because I looked at the prices here. Villa 2.3 to win on the exchange, and I'm going to take that because Chelsea have now lost 7 of 9 trips to the top 11. Their only win in that sequence was the bizarre game at Tottenham earlier in the season. They've now conceded 22 goals in those 9 away trips and have only 2 Premier League clean sheets since mid-December. They've also shipped multiple goals in 6 of the last 7 games in the Premier League, including against Burnley, Sheffield United, Brentford. So going forward, I've got no qualms with this Chelsea team, bar that sort of erratic finishing. But defensively, they're a long way off being the sort of tight, compact, defensively rigid and side that you kind of need to be progressing up the table. And I think Unai Emery can and probably will outsmart Pochettino and Chelsea here. I just think he's very streetwise. He'll know what's coming. He'll set Villa up in a way to make life difficult. And I think 2.3 is a nice price. Now, I've put the boot into Villa a few times in the last few months where I felt they've kind of drifted away from the form that we saw before Christmas. But the Arsenal performance was very eye-catching, as was the win against Bournemouth last weekend, a very good Bournemouth team.
Yeah.
And it came so soon after that game when they had to go the distance with Lille in the Conference League. And they actually looked stronger the longer the match went on against Bournemouth and looked very calm and composed in possession too. So we know the quality they possess in forward areas. We know their high line is particularly effective as well against the likes of Jackson. And all round, I just think they're a level ahead of where Chelsea want to be. And even more so with Douglas Luiz returning from suspension too to bolster the midfield. So the market is suggesting these two teams are about the same level. If this game was played at a neutral venue, they'd be looking at sort of an each or two price. But I actually think that's quite unfair on Villa. The market's being driven by the underlying data, which we know has been very positive for Chelsea all season. But I think this is an example where we can kind of go against the data and see more with our eyes what we've seen so far this season. And I think Villa at 2.3, it's a home side who've won 12 of their 17 home league games this season, averaging 2.5 goals per game as hosts. I think the 2.3 is actually a little bit disrespectful. I've got Villa around at evens, so there's wriggle room there, a bit of an edge on Villa.
Wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things that I was commentating for Villa TV every so often when they were in the Championship. It's amazing that they not only could qualify for the Champions League, but actually could win the Europa Conference League as well. It just shows you what an elite coach can do. Elsewhere, let's go to Colchester against Crewe. Didn't you have a very specific reason for wanting to talk about this game?
Yeah, it's final day in League One and League Two this weekend. So I think myself and Emmett have got lots of nice angles that we want to back as a result of it being final day. This game in particular, it's 22nd Colchester in League Two, 3 points clear of Sutton in the last relegation place for sixth in Crewe, who are 3 points clear of eighth place Crawley and outside the playoffs. So basically, both sides need a point to achieve their goal, and I think the draw is the bet for me as a result. It's well known by the market. This was 12 to 5 after Tuesday night. Pretty typical standard League Two draw price. But it's now best price 19 to 10. But I still think there's some juice in that price. And if you wanted to, you could Dutch 0-0 and 1-1 at a bigger price, because I think it's unlikely that this scenario plays out in the style of a high scoring game, but still would finish in a draw. So I think we can kind of discount 2-2 and 3-3 if we're on board with this scenario. I think that neither side is going to go into this game confident. Colchester lost four of their last six, including a 4-1 battering by Doncaster on Tuesday night, which is why we find ourselves in this scenario. And Crewe, they're just one win in eight, and they failed to score in five of their last six. So I hardly think either team really comes out here all guns blazing. It reminded me of a similar game back in 2018 in League Two when playoff chasing Coventry hosted relegation threatened Morecambe. Both sides needed a point to get in the playoffs and to stay up respectively. And the draw went off around about 2.6, and that finished 0-0 that day. And I thought it was interesting what I dug up what the two managers mentioned about the game. And I think it sums up quite well in all of these kind of games that have where a draw is what both sides want. Mark Robbins, for example, said there was a lot of stake and they made it difficult for us. It was a hot day, and sometimes that takes a sting out of games. And I think, 46th game of a long, long season, especially with this additional injury time, I think it will take a toll on the players. And then Jim Bentley, the Morecambe manager, says we sat in, we did what we needed to do, and they got what they wanted, and we got what we wanted. And I think that's ultimately, where I'm heading. If it's a draw after an hour, for example, do
Yeah,
we think
nobody's going
either?
hell for leather to win that, are they?
Yeah,
That's our power.
so there might be an in-play angle here as well. Maybe if you wanted to see how the first half developed and then got on board if you weren't happy. But it obviously would be at a lesser price. But it might be something that maybe there'll be an opportunity if say for example a team does happen to take the lead in the first half, then maybe you would want to get on the draw on side as well as a result. I don't think you'd be able to watch it, so maybe you have to sort of
I don't think
tune.
you'd want to by the sound of it.
Maybe you have to tune into a local radio station or something. But yeah, I think other than that, maybe if you follow the game on the Betfair app, you'll see the statistics and that, and you'll be able to see whether it's a shot heavy game, for example, and that will help drive your opinion. But talking about Crewe specifically, because you kind of feel they want to go for a win just to boost some confidence heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, sure.
However, it could be risky. As I say, I think a point is the more logical way to go. And if you lose Coventry, actually, as a bit of a template from that game, they actually drew at home in the first leg of the playoffs. Then they went to Notts County in the second leg and won 4-1 before they went on to Wembley to win 3-1. And look at where they are now. That was 6 years ago. And they're now being unlucky on FA Cup semi-finals and losing playoff finals to get promoted to the Premier League. So you look at similar game. When I was trying to think back recent memory, there was a game at Euro 2020 between Ukraine and Austria where a draw would have seen both qualify. That draw price went off at 2.3. And I think if we think of this in other competitions around the world, for example, Italy, I think we'd be looking at a price much closer to evens. I think it's kind of the integrity, perhaps, of English football sort of holding this price up. But I definitely think the longer the game stays the draw, as you sort of alluded to, Kev, it's unlikely that either side will go for it.
Let's take it back to the Premier League. Wolves up against Luton. Emmett Luton desperate for wins, but you think of them, you think of Burnley at this stage of the season. A lot of people, myself included, wouldn't have necessarily given Luton a hope of being even in the mix at this stage.
Definitely. I feel really bad for Rob Edwards in the sense I think he's done a brilliant job, and I really admire the way he kind of changed approach midstream in terms of they were playing quite a defensive reactive style, and they kind of moved to kind of more of a high variance, kind of a high variance style, which is leading to their games being high scoring. Obviously, they took a few hidings from City, but I think that's the right way to play. It's play like as in I think they're if it's kind of, I suppose in statistics they call them kind of David tactics in terms of David versus Goliath. Like if Luton can't play like Nottingham Forest or Everton, or they can't, if you don't have the same budget as your opposition, you have to try something different. And I think Wolves playing the way they did, obviously risking hammerings to try and eke out wins in certain games when the kind of variance went their way, I think was the right strategy. But I think what's done them in hasn't been Edwards' tactics, which I think are excellent. It's just the injuries. Like they Luton had a kind of sm Luton had a small squad to begin with. Obviously, I think most listeners will know what happened to Tom Lockyer with the. With this kind of heart issue, but like Marvellous Nakamba was a huge player for Luton. He's missed most of the season. Amari Bell, Issa Kabore, I think really in particular, Adebayo and Ireland international Chidozie Igbeneghu have been huge misses. Like Adebayo was really prolific, and he was up. He was wasn't. He was in the kind of once when he got injured, he was in the top like seven, top 10 in the kind of Premier League goal scoring charts. Igbeneghu as well as kind of he's a guy in a kind of a. How can I put this in a nice way? A struggling Ireland team. He's been kind of a beacon of hope for us the last couple of years. He's always performed, even in really bad Ireland teams. And he's looked like a Premier League player who might even get a move, even if Luton go down. I think he was a kind of a really good kind of counter-attacking winger who could play wing back or wide forward. So he's been a big miss them.
Well, he
and
gets
we've
you up the pitch, doesn't he? That's
big.
what you need, don't you? You need players who are going to get you up the pitch quickly and actually take a bit of pressure off, and he's absolutely that.
Precisely. I think the role of the winger has changed in many ways, but one of them, as you kind of mentioned there, was with teams playing these kind of, with so many teams playing pressing systems, the wingers can't hang around the touchline. They have to be kind of getting in field, receiving the ball in tight spaces, and as you said, get them up the pitch. And Benet has kind of redeveloped into that. But just in terms of in going back to Luton, like in their last 12 games, they've only taken 5 points. I think we see the 33 goals in that span, an average nearly 3 goals a game. I think they're playing like nearly one of the worst teams in the league. And despite kind of Wolves seemingly have nothing to play for here, I think they're a far better team than Luton, given Luton's absences. And I have them shorter than their current price of over evens in the exchange. Wolves should have Matias Cunha fit enough to start alongside Wang Yi Chan, which should give them, I think, enough potency to really kind of take this kind of stro put a struggling Luton defence to the sword. So Wolves to win here looks a solid bet to me.
A brave effort from Luton so far, but you look at the way they played against Brentford, and you can play a high-risk strategy, but if you're making loads of mistakes as well, then it makes it really, really difficult. If you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Mark, you want to take a look at the Championship, Norwich against Swansea. What's going on with Wagner Ball these days?
Surprisingly good, actually.
Yes, I was surprised.
there was a period there before Christmas where it was astonishing he was still in a job, really, but he's managed to turn it around. And Norwich are now looking very likely to finish in the top six. So this is quite a straightforward one for me, actually. I'm sure the guys will talk about motivation shortly in League One and League Two. It's the penultimate weekend of the Championship regular season. And here we have a Norwich team who are highly motivated at home, facing a Swansea side in mid-table, no man's land, and effectively, not so motivated, shall we say. So Norwich are obviously desperate to hold on to the top six. Hull winning at Coventry on Wednesday night means they have to keep on plugging away, pick up another 3 points to almost guarantee their position in the playoffs. And quite happy to back them to do so this Saturday because they are very strong at Carrow Road. If you exclude the top two, they've won 15 of 20 home games this season. If you look at their record at home against the bottom half, it's 10 wins from 11. They're very, very consistent at Carrow Road. And Swansea, not so much. So more recently, they've picked up 3 wins on the spin, which looks great. They absolutely stuffed Huddersfield last weekend, which was a very surprising result away from home. However, if you look at those 3 wins, all came against relegation battlers, and Swansea do tend to struggle when stepping up in class, especially away from home. 9 defeats in 11 trips to the top half. And across the whole campaign, Swansea are giving up the second highest expected goals figure when playing away. That's just behind Rotherham United, who have already been relegated. So quite happy to be pro Norwich here. They're out 172 on the exchange, but we can boost that price up to 191 by backing Norwich to win and over 1.5 goals. basically ruling out the 1-0 correct score here for the home side. So 80% of all Norwich and 80% of all Swansea matches have featured at least two goals this season. Both have been involved in plenty of high scoring, decent games too. So I think Norwich scored twice in this game. And if they do, they win the game.
Let's take it to the EFL. And Stinch, you've got three games you want to talk about, but there's a kind of common thread that runs through all of them.
Yeah, so now, as I mentioned before, in the last weekend of League One and League Two, so everybody knows exactly what they need to get what they want to achieve. And we talk about motivation, but then we also talk about teams that have nothing to play for. And I want to get with teams that have high motivation, playing teams that have nothing to play for at odds that I think are a value, essentially. So there's, for example, you look at League Two, Bradford, who are ninth, are hosting 17th Newport. Bradford are 2 points off the playoffs. Bradford are 4-11. So these are the sort of prices that we're talking about. But I think I found a few that I think are, or a couple rather, that actually are worth a bet at the odds. So I wouldn't be back in Bradford at 4-11. No way. And for example, on Tuesday, Doncaster went to Colchester, were 7-5 after all of the results on Saturday. So after all the results at the weekend, the we as punters and the market knew exactly what teams would need, so we had a good idea what prices should be. So Doncaster was 7-5 after the weekend. They went off odds on Tuesday night. So these are the sort of swings that we are seeing, and
they're massive changes, aren't they? Really,
yes.
I understand the logic behind them, but they are huge changes.
Yes, yeah, so what I'm saying is hopefully we can get ahead of the curve a little bit and take some odds that I think are value. They might not crash. There might be enough resistance from the market to sort of prop them up. But I definitely think they're good bets regardless, because we're betting against teams that, yeah, have nothing to play for, essentially. So I would never be wanting to back a team with nothing to play for. You know, you think about at top level football, even say, you know, Leverkusen, when they went away to West Ham, 2-0 lead, why would you want to be back in Leverkusen when they don't need to win,
yeah,
for example? So the first one I was looking at was Oxford away at Exeter. Oxford at 8-11. They are level on points in seventh with Lincoln in sixth, but have a much worse goal difference. They actually were 10-11 after Saturday's games. And given Exeter are undefeated in their last nine, I actually don't think Exeter have given up the season. So I'm going to say this is one not to back. I'd say the price has come in from 10-11 to 8-11. So I'm going to say this is one to swerve, but it's just, you know, just to put on people's radars. So the first one is Blackpool away at Reading. Blackpool are odds against. And yeah, I've opposed Reading a few times this season, and so I'm very happy to do it when they don't need anything. And Blackpool are in a really good form at the moment. They're 1 point off the playoffs, just 2 points off fifth. So essentially, there's kind of two spots up for grabs in League One. So I feel like there's plenty of motivation for the teams chasing in League One. Blackpool won 8 of their last 13. They've conceded just 7, and they've kept 7 clean sheets. And I think that's so impressive, because they've beaten Bolton, Peterborough, Barnsley and held Portsmouth all in that run of fixtures. So I think it's a great achievement. And just recently, they've been ahead at half time in the last 4 matches. So they're really getting off to fast starts. Reading, nothing to play for in 17th. As I mentioned, they're 6 points clear of the drop. And I spoke about them a few weeks ago, and I think they look exhausted. So I'm really excited about being able to back Blackpool minus a quarter here, around about 1.85 on the exchange. So even if it finishes in a draw, we'll get half our stake back. So that's the first one. And then the other one was Crawley at home to Grimsby in League Two. Crawley were odds against after Saturday, but they're now 8-11. I think that's just about backable, or if you maybe wanted to double it up with Blackpool, for example. Crawley are in eighth. They're 1 point off the playoffs, but only... But it's not just seventh that's up for grabs. Fifth and sixth are within clutches. They're only 3 points off, and goal difference is very similar. So again, plenty of motivation to not only win, but maybe rack up a few goals as well. So you could even maybe look at the handicaps if you wanted to try and get a bigger price. They have actually started a little bit of late Crawley, but the last four have featured Wrexham and Barrow, who are obviously in the conversation for promotion, and relegation battlers Colchester and Sutton. So essentially coming up against teams with motivation. Here they're playing a Grimsby side who are 21st, 8 points clear relegation now after they secured their safety last weekend. So they probably had, a nice week of maybe a few drinks. We saw after Portsmouth won the league, I don't know if you saw any of the scenes or videos, Kev. I think
I did.
they might have had more than one drink. I think that's
Yeah, I think it's
okay to say.
possible. I think it's possible.
And then their following match, they lost at home to Wigan. So I don't think it's anything to suggest that these teams that have just secured their goals have maybe not really bothered about the next game. And actually, Grimsby have got the worst record in terms of wins in the division on the road this season. They've won just twice away from home. So yeah, I think this could be one-way traffic from Crawley. They won 8 of their 11 games before the last few against motivated teams. They've got a really dangerous couple of strikers in Danilo Orsi and Claddy Lola. So they've got 30 goals between them. So you could even maybe look at those to get on the score sheet if you wanted to as well.
Probably the crypto bros, right? Is that still a thing? Oh dear,
Yeah, they
right.
were heavily tipped for relegation, but now they're in the talk for promotion. So there's been a huge change around, and I think the fans have put to one side the battles with the boardroom to focus on the team.
Good to hear. Lovely stuff. Emmett, you've got a few games in the EFL as well that you want to look at with this League Two and League Two fin a League One and League Two finale.
Yeah, exactly. You're just reminding me there of some of my failed anti-pos bets. Yeah, I was, I'm like one of those. I felt like one of those stock short sellers, that kind of expecting Crawley to really be out of business in mid-season and being relegated as a result. But well,
I mean, with good reason, I think a
yeah, with
few of
good
us were
reason.
concerned, to be fair.
But no, good to see for the Crawley fans. But forget about me. It's all about me. Forget about it. For the Crawley fans' point of view, and for English league football, it's kind of a nice story, and hopefully it continues. But going back to point here, yeah. So I think, as Stinch said, I think from a gambler, I think I really love these kind of last day of the season matches. I think we'll probably talk about this in the weeks to come. There's angles like if your player's competing for a top scorer berth, I think sometimes you can get inflated goal score prices and doing kind of multis between them. So hopefully the Premier League top scorer will be up for grabs. We can maybe get something like that in the kind of weeks ahead. But I think there are just three games here that kind of scream goals to me because of the kind of the motivation and the opposition who these teams are playing. So the three games are Lincoln v Portsmouth in League One, and Barrow v Mansfield, and MK Dons v Sutton in League Two. And in all three cases, we have a team that needs to win. In Lincoln and Barrow's case, it's a win to kind of guarantee making the playoffs or having a chance of making the playoffs. And in MK Dons versus Sutton need to win to have any chance of avoiding relegation. And in Sutton's case, because they're in the game that was already mentioned, they're relying on Colchester losing to Crewe, but a Colchester loss by one goal will require Sutton to win by kind of t by two or three goals. So it's kind of, I think that game specifically as well should it kind of really points to kind of a high scoring game. And just in terms of the teams that either playing all three opposition, so Portsmouth, Mansfield, and MK Dons have nothing to play for, but are all kind of very, very good high scoring teams. Like Portsmouth are League One champions and kind of one of the highest scoring teams in the division. MK Dons are kind of guaranteed to make the playoffs, but they've been kind of a overs king all season. Over 60% of their matches are going over 2.5 goals, and kind of and Mansfield are kind of guaranteed promotion, but they've also been a really high scoring team this year, and in 7 of their last 10 matches, over 2.5 goals has landed. So I think, like, if you're looking for a bet here, the way I'd play it, I think I wouldn't probably do singles. I'd look to do over 2.5 goals in in kind of all three of those games. And on the sports book as a treble, that comes out at kind of just under 9-2, which is fair. But I'd also probably take a bigger swing in terms of doing kind of a small, because you can have a case where, like, in these matches, we kind of to really have a chance to bet winning, you need the team is willing to play for the score. And if that doesn't happen, say in one of the games, like the team needing to win scores first and sit back, obviously then that's not a game state. That kind of suits overs. So I think in terms of what might be a better play, as well as doing the treble, is I do a small tricksy on over 3.5 goals. So if one of the games doesn't go our way, but two do in terms of over 3.5, that'll lead to decent profit. So the tricksy on over 3.5 goals comes in at around 25-1. But if only two results go our way, we're still looking at a kind of an 8, kind of 7 or 8-1 double. So I think that's the way I'd play it.
Didn't like the sound of that. There was lots of nodding and pursed lips. You like the sound of that? 25-1. Now it's time for the world famous podcast treble, a feature so revered that the reason Jurgen Klopp's really stepping down from Liverpool is just to give him more time to listen to the show. How this works is each of the three guys come up with a selection ahead of the weekend's action, and lovely traders like Emmett here wrap it up for you in a boosted treble. Mark O'Hare, I'm going to come to you first.
Yeah, I'll keep it simple with Norwich City to beat Swansea.
Lovely. Stinch.
Yeah, I'll go for Colchester v Crewe as a draw suits both.
And Emmett, take us home.
love
the deep cynicism involved there.
Exactly. Yeah, not one to tell your parents, but anyway. In terms of the kind of League One and League Two end of season fixtures, the one I really liked most for overs is that Sutton versus MK Dons. Sutton games the end of the season have been incredibly high scoring, with over 3.5 goals, kind of clicking all of their last few matches. So over 2.5 goals at around 1.65 in the sports book looks very fair.
Lovely stuff. Now, this has all been very informative, all very lovely. I'm sure we've all had a great time. But really, it's just the prelude to Mark O'Hare's Scott Watch.
Oh, aye. It's Scott Watch.
Mark, the floor is yours.
Okay, we're going to tip down to Scottish League One, where Falkirk have already been crowned champions. They have been champions for a good few weeks now, but they're most definitely not on the beach, and they're most definitely not on the beers too soon, because they're absolutely gunning to complete what would be an invincible season in Scottish League One.
Okay.
So just two games left to play. Falkirk are unbeaten, winning 27 of their 34 league matches. And next up is a trip to Annan. So I'm going to back Falkirk to win here, but I'm also going to include both teams to score, which gives us a really nice 2-1 price here, because Falkirk have been a little bit more hard and loose of late, especially after securing the title. They've dropped points just 3 times in the last 19 games, but it's just 1 clean sheet in the last 7. So they've won and seen both teams scoring in 5 of those 7, including 3 of the last 4 away games. And this weekend, they're going away to Annan, who are the BTTS Kings of Scottish League One. They've landed BTTS in 28 of 34 league matches. They've only failed to score in 4 of those 34, but managed just 2 clean sheets on their own as well. So I can't see them keeping Falkirk quiet here, but I would fancy them to get on the score sheet themselves. So comes in at a nice 2-1 shot. But yeah, that's something to watch out for the next fortnight. Falkirk trying to have an invincible season in the Scottish League One. Just 2 games to play, 27 wins from 34 unbeaten matches. Quite impressive.
Were they relegated last season? Is that why they're so good? Why are they so dominant?
They've got financial muscle, but they've been in this division for, I think, maybe 2 to 3 seasons now.
There was
a shock when they dropped out, and they've basically fluffed their lines the last couple of years. So they are the big club in that division, but they finally got it together this year. In terms of Culture Corner, we've covered both of these two teams a few times, really. So I've kind of revisited a previous topic, tried to be a little bit inventive. So we're going to delve into the local media surrounding the home side in action here, just to pick out a few news stories that have been published in the Annan area in the past week or two. So this is all taken from the Dumfries and Galloway News, belt up, because it's pretty good.
Wild rides.
Nice story to start with. There's a fellow from Loch Ken who is preparing to break a world record by becoming the first and fastest person ever to run 32 ultra marathons. So he's intending to run
Wow.
32 ultra marathons, which is 33 miles a day, in all 32 council areas of Scotland within 32 days, which is well over 1,000 miles in total. So hell of an effort. He's looking to raise
Yes.
awareness and support for mental and physical health.
Oh,
So
good.
pretty impressive for a nice starting point. But we'll move on to the good stuff because the headline reads, "Is this your pen?" So the hunt is
I'm
on.
hooked already. I'm
The
in.
hunt is on for the owner of a lost pen. It comes after a lady named Angie Bone saw a man looking in the depths for something around the veggie aisle at Annan's Aldi store. Now, Angie asked the man if he was okay and if she could help, and he explained that he had won a pen well over 40 years ago and he'd lost it under the railings. Anyway, he went home all upset. He thought his pen had been lost. But Angie kept on searching and she found the pen, but she can't find the owner of the pen. So there's a news story from Annan, genuine news story about, is this your pen? If you are, show your face because it's been found.
How does she know that was the right pen? He
No idea.
described it, presumably. He's found
I
Biro and
guess.
gone, I've done it, I've found it.
the fact it's
Right,
in the local
okay.
news. But anyway, finally, Annan is amongst five towns in the Dumfries and Galloway region to be nominated as Britain's most depressing town in an online poll. And
Oh
local
dear.
leaders are not happy and
I'll
they've come
bet.
out defending themselves and their town. So the annual survey asks the public to nominate where they think is the most bland, boring, soul-destroying place to live. Now, normally the questionnaire aims to uncover the worst place in the UK, but this year it's been changed to find the most depressing. Anyway, Annan's community council chair, Alan Weald, came out very
No,
upset by
he's
this
not called
nomination.
Alan. The head of the Alan Community Chair is called Alan.
Alan from
Right, okay.
Annan, he
Amazing.
said, "I don't think it's depressing at all. You've just got to look at the groups that work to make Annan better and make it look nice, from the History Town Group to the Rotary Club. I don't think it's justified at all. Plenty of people are looking to move here, and you wouldn't move somewhere if it's depressing. It might be a bit rough around the edges, but what town is perfect these days?" So he's come out firing, he's not happy, and Annan are trying to prove themselves as a happy place to live. But yeah, it's been nominated as one of the most depressing places in Britain.
Right, if you live in Annan, the fight back starts here. Send us on our Betfair social media channels or the comments under the YouTube show. Tell us why Annan is not one of the most depressing places in the country. Otherwise, Alan from Annan is going to be really upset. Angie and Aldi looking for pens on the floor. She's going to be furious as well. So, yes, the civic campaign starts here. Sadly, I'd love to do another hour on this, but sadly, that's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Of course, we've got the Sunday show. All the cool kids listen to both. It's only the dweebs that listen to one of them, so make sure you listen to that. Remember, all of our shows now are on YouTube on Betfair's channel for non-racing content, so make sure you like and subscribe. We've got other shows in the Betfair Podcast Network as well, including a couple of racing shows, Racing Only Better and the Weighed In Podcast. From Mark, from Stinch, from Emin, from Angie and Aldi, from Alan in Annan, and me, it's goodbye for now.